Our Orbit, Chapter 1. Pedal pressed to the floor of the old Impala. Emmeline flew past farms and forest down Old Academy Road. Trees in the woodlots loomed black and bare, their trunks frosted on the windward side in gathering snow. Up ahead, a sign for Friendly Village Mobile Home Park stood beneath the only light for miles along this stretch of road. That light cast a tempting glow on a January evening. Snow swarmed around it like bugs in summer. Emmeline suppressed a sigh. Instead of slowing for the turn, she tapped the horn and called out, "Hold the fort, Friendly!"
"Friendly holding steady,"
sang little Miriam from the back seat, quick to answer the cue in this family routine of forgotten origin. Homage to the home where Emmeline arrived as a bride half her life ago. At 8, Miriam was her youngest and seemed destined to be her last. God hadn't been disposed to send another, even though Levi wanted her nearly as often as he did when she was a girl of 20 and he finally a husband at the age of 42.
"We did our best," Emmeline told herself, "and our best was not too shabby. Two boys and two girls for the Lord's kingdom."
The road gave a hollow rumble as she crossed the bridge over Lancaster Creek and sped into the straightaway. No time to stop, however strong home called from the blue and gray trailer at the rear of the park. Emmeline knew she ought to be there, warming up yesterday's ham and bean soup so Levi could sit down to something hot in this nasty weather. That was her wintertime method. While he got started on soup, she'd have time to fry up his pork steak or chopped beef with potatoes the way he liked them, dredged in onion salt and black pepper. Any minute now he'd be pulling up in his truck. It would make him cross to see the dark windows declare his family was not at home. He'd just have to tolerate it this one time. The call had come just as Emmeline was reaching for her coat in the service room at the South Side laundromat back in town. She was ready to go fetch Miriam from school and head on home, but the voice on the line brought her to a full stop. Praise God! 3 days she'd been waiting to hear it. Rachel had disappeared on Friday. Now she wanted to ride back from wherever she'd been hanging out. Somebody's house on Blacklick Road. Must be that new family with the llamas that let their kids run wild on those awful motorbikes. Nothing was more important right now than to bring her girl child back from the brink of even worse trouble than she'd got in so far.
"She's our prodigal," Emmeline imagined telling Levi. "We have to welcome her with open arms. You should have heard her voice on the phone, civil for once, asking me to bring her back to us. I drove fast as I could to fetch her. Were there any apples left in the bottom of the fridge? It'd be nice to throw together a little dessert to celebrate Rachel's homecoming, and, by the by, to soften up Levi."
Snow pelted the Impala's windshield, coating the rim where wipers couldn't reach. In the ditches that edged the road through the valley, white-tipped cattails shuddered under the wind.
"You know those kids Rachel's been palling round with?" Emmeline asked.
She looked in the rear view at Miriam, who sat belted in beside the laundry hamper.
"Those folks with the noisy bikes?"
Miriam was loyal to her sister, but occasionally she would let a morsel of information slip out. Now she said something her mother couldn't catch over the drone of muffler and whap of wipers. "I don't know," or "probably so," or something in between. For an extra second, Emmeline rested her eyes on the child huddled behind her under a snagged red, white, and blue afghan. She stole a quick pleasure in the frame of copper-brown hair around ivory cheeks and hazel eyes. All the females in the family shared that pretty coloring, from my side, Emmeline thought, with a slight smile. Her own hair had indeed been that same warm shade. Never a strand of gray till Rachel started eighth grade last fall. What a shock it was that morning after Halloween to see the girl straggle up the road, her beautiful ponytail hacked off in something she called the owl cut. Levi's rage had rattled the windows. "Who is this tramp from under the bridge?" Worries, thick as the snow these first days of 1995,
The year already felt old. Emmeline flipped the defroster up to high and shook her head as a singed smell rose from the heating coil. We are old-fashioned people, she had to admit. It's our way. But maybe Rachel needs a bit more lenience. Maybe you can't raise kids today as strict as she and Levi had managed with the first two. You'd think the boys came of age in a bygone era before respect for elders went clean out the window. Isaac and Josh were basically grown, both godly young men who understood a day's work. Isaac, the eldest, took a tree service job right out of high school 2 years ago. A fine-looking boy. Small wonder a woman snapped him up just like that. Since Isaac got married over in Zanesville last spring, Emmeline was lucky to lay eyes on him once in 2-3 months. At least Josh was still at home. A junior this year, her younger boy had become his father's right-hand man in the salvage business. A fine thing, but Emmeline wondered if Josh might have left boyhood behind too soon, turning his back on sports and fun, taking Levi's every word like holy scripture. Last fall, when Rachel started to lie about where she went after school, Emmeline blessed Josh for acting as informant. What a disappointment it was when his efforts only made the girl more defiant and drove her more stubbornly away. That's why I have to make sure things go smooth tonight, Emmeline told herself. However steamed Levi might be by the time they got home, however justified Josh's reproach of his sister, I will override them so Rachel can feel the welcome and the love. It seemed like she spent her life steering for calmer waters, offering Levi a piece of pie or urging him to take a nice fishing trip. Not that she would undermine him in front of the children. That's what made it a touchy job. A row of bur oaks stood at the curve where the road began to wind uphill, low dunes of snow already banked at their roots. The car swerved a quick fishtail. Emmeline lifted her foot and let the speed drop. This corner of Ohio leaned so hard on West Virginia. The land had resisted conversion to cornfields for over 200 years. I'm old as these hills, Levi used to joke with Rachel and Miriam when they begged to know his age. Twice as dirty, Emmeline would deadpan to round out the saying. Then her husband's eye got that watch-your-tongue woman gleam that meant the two of them would settle this matter later on. For 2 decades, Emmeline had loved and honored her man. But her doubt in his wisdom had grown since a Jersey County deputy paid her a visit one morning some 3 weeks back. The young man, she recognized him as a schoolmate of Isaac's, had knocked at the trailer to warn her about a phone call he took from Cincinnati the day before. The bureaucrat on the line wanted their department to monitor one Levi Winslow of Jersey Hauling and Salvage. IRS enforcement, the deputy said. No secret what that means. They needed assistance in tracking Mr. Winslow's stops at the scrap metal dealers where he picked up a chunk of his income. Emmeline knew her husband had fudged their taxes for at least 10 years. He'd start with figures from the 82 return, the year he founded Jersey Hauling after the brick kilns consolidated. Their earnings were so patchy back then, they owed nothing at all. Ever since, Levi would alter the numbers to create a semblance of variation without letting the total mount up to where Uncle Sam could skim off a cut. We can't owe much, Emmeline had told the deputy. It's a one-man operation. No one ever mentioned that Levi's brother Daniel sold much of the salvage and split the cash proceeds. They can get receipts from anybody's bought goods off you, the boy said. He leaned in till she caught the whiff of aftershave from his ruddy chin. They're watching people close these days. Militants, tax protesters. Make sure you keep a record of cost, offset the profit. Emmeline's fingertips went cold when she heard that. And she felt the cold again now, remembering. The deputy seemed to imagine she could persuade Levi to do something different than what he'd put his mind to. Scrubby wild plums fanned their branches over the shoulder as the car whipped past Gypsy Lane. It felt like time had stopped. The drive was taking forever. Rachel might get tired of waiting and run off somewhere else with those godless friends of hers. This very moment, they could be smoking, drinking, reaching under each other's clothes. This notion brought a sick dread. There was not enough pie or hot soup in the world to erase Levi's fury if his daughter came home one day with a swollen belly. Blame would come to roost right on the mother's shoulder. No two ways about that. Halfway up Martin's Hill, she floored the gas again to keep the sluggish car moving. At the crest, a seep from the rock face lay slick on black asphalt. The Impala overtook the slope and finally picked up speed. That's where she hit ice. A yaw seized the rear end. Emmeline slammed the brake. No, a big mistake. She spun out in the far lane. Woo! Came Miriam's cry from the back seat. Sweet Jesus, Emmeline called. She struggled with the wheel till the bumper smacked a post at the shoulder. Part of her mind asked, did I turn on the radio? How could her own voice be praying on the air? The post shattered, a pillar of dry rot. The car plowed over the edge and down. Jesus! Jesus! Saplings lashed the doors. High above, a cloud shifted its silver rim. A halo of night sky opened, studded with stars. Caught in the miracle, Emmeline counted 4, 5, 6 stars in the pool of black. One broke loose and fell away. At the same moment, the world-smart surface of her mind said, we're in the woods, in a snowstorm. You can't possibly see the sky. Dread shot through the core of her body. All her worries, love and fear, rose up in the cold air as the Impala came to rest against the trunk of a hard maple. Waves from the blast flew between branches and carried the crash up the valley. A mist of snow shrouded the car. It sifted slowly onto the roof, the trunk and fenders, the pleated hood and the ground. Miriam felt her feet and hands start to float in the air. The tail of her braid rose from her shoulder, like in the astronaut's weightless chamber on TV at school. When the car hit the ground like the floor wanted to smash the roof, Miriam's teeth chomped the soft meat of her tongue. Blood filled her mouth. Next came a rush of speed that led to the biggest slam there ever was. A storm of towels leaped in the air. The seatbelt choked her neck. The weight of her head rocked up and back. Miriam would never believe a lot of the things people said about what happened. They claimed that when the sheriff found the Impala, she was screaming like a cat trapped under the hood. Not me, she insisted. I didn't hear a thing. It was silent night for miles around. And pitch dark until spotlights flashed in the cracked windows. She knew she must look awful with all the blood she'd spit out when she couldn't stand to swallow anymore. And she remembered fighting to get out from under the Afghan's heavy drape. She didn't believe they brought her to the hospital in an ambulance. She never heard a siren or a motor or a door open or her seatbelt unclick. The trip into town was like a magic carpet. She floated out and left the Impala behind like any junk car in the woods. Still no sound. Her eyes focused on doctors and nurses jerking around her, handing over plastic bags with dangly tubes. Only the man in the X-ray room seemed to be trying to tell her something important as she lay on a cold table under the machine that he pulled on rails along the ceiling. After many blank hours, a voice finally spoke at the white bedside. She shifted her head, pain stabbed her neck, and her daddy appeared, like he'd been waiting there, saying over and over again, "My baby, my poor baby child." Miriam didn't think her smile could look very pretty with her mouth hurt so bad. But she did feel joy when Daddy's voice made its way to her ears. There were his shoulders and wide middle that looked like a big bear. She would sing to him sometimes when he came home in the evening. The bear came over the mountain to see what he could see. Now his eyes hung dark above her, the creases deep over his white eyebrows, the beard that covered his throat flecked with twisty black hairs and dotted with dew. Miriam struggled onto her elbows and saw that Rachel was there too, standing next to her father. "That's right. Me and Mama drove out to find her and bring her home. There was something wrong with Rachel's face. White and stiff, she looked like a picture painted on a flat board under the tufty hair that was still hard to get used to. You better be good from now on. You better do what Mama tells you." But all that came from Miriam's mouth was a slow moan. "Hush, baby girl," her father said. "Lie still. No time for talk yet." When he said that, Rachel's stiff face seemed to break in pieces. The cheeks arched up, the mouth splayed in a frown, and she sobbed out loud.